Fargo Busters.
That's the name of your podcast. That'd be amazing if, your, if the podcast was called Fargo Busters.
We're going to do a president. I don't know why they keep inviting us. Anyway, doing for his shit.
Games. It's October 28th, 2009. It's October 29th, 2009.
And this is Idle Thumbs 49. And I'm Chris Remo.
How do I follow that?
With your name.
But anything I do, it's going to be Nick. You fucked it up again.
Oh, well, now you did.
You spoke too fast. You spoke too slow. You fucking talk too loud.
What's your name?
My name's Nick Brecken, and I fucked it all up.
This is why Nick is leaving.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
All right. So we, earlier this week, recorded an interview with...
Earlier this week?
Yeah.
Earlier this week, we were. You're right.
We recorded an interview with Max Schaefer from Runic Games that just released Torchlight, the excellent action RPG for PC, and realized that maybe for the second to last episode of Idle Thumbs, we should actually have it be an episode of Idle Thumbs. Mm-hmm. So as you guys probably know, we've already released that, and we decided to record another one. So
Jake wanted to say something. So we're
Jake, it's something very important to say.
I don't have anything to say.
Oh, well, you better think of something soon.
Oh, video games.
Time for an hour and a Idle Thumbs. I don't know what I just said.
Time for...
I realize.
You're thumbs. The creator. Yeah.
So here we are. Video games. I honestly, the game I've mainly been playing is Torchlight.
Yeah, so me too. Yeah, what are you going
to
do?
We just, I mean, you guys are going to be up to your ass in Idle Thumbs talking about Torchlight. But
we didn't offer, like...
you guys are going to be up to your ass in Idle Thumbs.
All right, that wasn't ideal, but...
And Torchlights.
You know, Torchlights.
Yeah.
But it's really good. I've mainly been playing that.
Yeah.
We were probably embarrassingly... Well, me, I guess I mainly was probably... sort of embarrassingly positive on the game during our interview, but I, you know, what
you seem to be liking it though from
really,
everything you've
really
been
like
saying
it.
About it.
I,
you know, you guys kept posting, you posted those conversation, that conversation between you guys up on the,
that was mainly self-deprecating, but yeah,
I know, but you could tell from that conversation that you guys were both, enjoying the game.
Yeah.
You were winning the game.
Yep. I'm pretty close to getting the end. I think Nick and I are actually pretty much in the same space roughly.
You're probably a little bit ahead of me at this point, but. Yeah, we were on the same. We were on the exact same level when we were talking,
right?
2 days ago, at 4 a.m. Yeah. So yeah, no, it's a really good game. Yep.
Nice. Thought you were going somewhere with some of that. Nope.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
we're what should we talk about with Torchlight that we didn't cover? Just impressions.
I guess what you guys think. As everyone listening at home probably noticed, said maybe three words during that interview because I haven't played more than about 40 minutes of a Diablo game ever in my life because I'm Video Games Rodkin. So I didn't have a whole lot to say, but I know the basics of Diablo. I've watched a million people play enough of it, but I don't actually know a whole lot about Torchlight other than you guys asked me to play it and I didn't have time to. You guys, I mean, is that worth talking about, or is it been
the basics
has it been tread to death about Torchlight is from the Diablo guys? It's a similar game stylistically, but why would I want to play it if I already am still playing Diablo games or if I've never played Diablo? Either of those two.
Yeah. I mean,
well,
I think it's
a fair question.
Because, I mean, you guys play the shit out of Diablo and also, obviously, you guys guys play a lot of these sort of Diablo-alikes that come along, but you seem to
be
super into this one.
Yeah. Well, the sentiment, to some degree, is why should I buy Torchlight if I already own Diablo 2? It doesn't have multiplayer and... you know, it seems like just kind of a bare... I mean, there's only three classes and et cetera, et cetera. But I think that, I mean, there is a different tone to it.
Yeah.
There are improvements to it on a mechanic.
Feel to it.
It has a different feel to it. Yeah. It's in 3D. And yeah, just by its nature being a single player game, there is a different flow to the combat, and you do get in sort of a different groove than if you were just playing Diablo 2 with a bunch of people.
It feels like it's like the gaming equivalent of the solo album from some of the guys who
right.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll
never be as big as the stuff when the band was together.
Right, but it might be doing different or interesting things that they couldn't have gotten away with in main Diablo.
Yep. Yeah. That is the case, I think.
And I have to say, I guess if I was going to give someone a reason to play, well, I guess it's harder for me to address the people who've never played Diablo because I've known Diablo
your life
for so
is
long.
Diablo,
yeah, but
you've
but
known
to
it.
Someone who has played Diablo, I would say about Torchlight is that it feels like a game that I can play like I could Diablo. I mean, it's so playable, it's so tuned. There's some balance issues I think it has that are flaws that we can talk about.
Yeah.
But the actual underlying mechanics of the game are so strong that I don't actually, on a moment-to-moment basis, really care about the balance issues. And that's what matters more. I mean, Diablo 2 was pretty unbalanced.
Clicking on things and killing dudes and looting a thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But the ability to fluidly react to situations, switch between your skills instantly, like when you've got all your pet, sending my pet to go pick up other stuff while I'm going somewhere else. I mean, it's the kind of game where this is what I love about PC games when PC games are good, right? When they're native to the PC, when they feel like you're doing it. You've got your fingers on the keyboard. Your fingers are where you want them to be. I feel like they could do more with this game in terms of user binding. That's always something I wish there was more of. But for the most part, you're playing this game. You've got your hotkeys in there. And it's just that it feels so playable. It's so together.
I think
such a complete...
You know what I would like to see is this blowing the minds of a lot of World of Warcraft players who haven't played an action RPG, who haven't played Diablo.
Yeah.
Because it does, just stylistically, it is closer to World of Warcraft than it is Diablo.
Aesthetically?
Yeah, aesthetically. And visually. And it does actually borrow some things from World of Warcraft. I mean,
skill bars a little closer to it.
Yeah, yeah. Skill bars, item comparisons and things like that, on a basic level.
Well, they had that in Diablo.
Please, Nick.
Did they?
Item comparisons were in Diablo 2.
Okay. Yeah, well, anyway. There are some other systems like that. Yeah. Anyway.
But the big difference is
just the immediacy of playing an action RPG that it is an action RPG. Whereas
one click
and,
per action.
Right. Yeah. You're killing a lot of guys and it all feels really satisfying and you can quit whenever you want to and not disappoint 40 raid members. I mean, it is completely different.
Until the MMO version comes out.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
But one thing I want to go further, in addition to just, I mean, you're killing lots of guys, sure, but on the moment-to-moment basis, to me, what makes this so different, I mean, it doesn't just apply to Torchlight, this is Diablo as anything. For someone who hasn't played a game like that, but has played World of Warcraft, to me, the biggest difference, like when you get in there on the granular level, is that when you click one time, that's one action. And these games are often disparaged for having you click a million times as a result of that. But that's what makes them work.
Every click is an actual thing in the world.
Exactly. It's not like you don't just lock yourself into the combat mode, right? Where you're in World of Warcraft, you can just hit the combat button once and then your guy goes on his little timer. I mean, you can hold down the button and do this and just have the attack repeat in an action RPG like Torchlight, but everything you're doing is based on...
It does actually... I mean, to a large extent, that's true, but it also does borrow that World of Warcraft taskbar. There are spells that have cooldowns. What I did want to say, though, is that which is something that Max actually mentioned, but it being a single-player game and you're not dealing with that MMO lag... Like, I mean, there are spells in World of Warcraft that are immediate, that have immediate effects, but in that setting, they often feel just sloppy and kind of unsatisfying.
Feel what seems like a modem.
Yeah, basically,
The network exists.
Yeah. So
what we're apparently doing is specifically selling Torchlight to World of Warcraft.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it is a good game.
We've determined that this is a...
It is actually... I mean, I think if I was playing World of Warcraft, it is a good game, like a side game companion game.
And it even looks fairly similar in terms of color palette and proportion and so forth, I really like how this game looks.
Mm-hmm.
It would not be a good sequel to Diablo visually, but it's a good own separate game.
Yeah. What were you saying, Jake?
I can't remember now, but just all of the conversations that we've had about this game and the interview that we did earlier have made me realize finally that I should probably play one of these at some point.
Yeah, this is a good one to get into because it's not like Diablo where you've got to invest yourself in this like history of, well, not like history in terms of lore, but, you know, as soon as you, this especially
is a,
in a multiplayer
a new,
environment.
A new streamlined game made by the exact same people as the old one. So
and
I don't
it's single
need
player.
To,
you don't need to go on there and have a
there's,
dude.
There's like, no need to dive into what is coming up on like 20 years of...
Yeah.
Well,
10 years. 15,
oh, I guess it's 10, 10 or... When was
90,
Diablo 1?
97, I guess.
Diablo 1 was 97.
Oh, wow. Okay. I thought it was more like 15 or 20. Nope. I guess not. I guess it was a high-res VGA game.
Yeah.
Yes.
Definite late 90s game.
Yep.
Yep.
All right, fine. A decade of dudes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like I said in the interview, ideally this would be a multiplayer game, right? I mean, in a perfect world, you would have the option of playing this single player or multiplayer.
Well, it's not like they're not aware of that, though. Since
sure.
Since
yeah.
their next SKU is
yeah.
a multiplayer
but variant. But speaking to people who... Because I've seen a lot of people say, basically, no multiplayer, no buy, and I think you'd be doing yourself a disservice to not at least try this and see if you actually maybe like it more than you thought you would single player, because I went a full 7 or 8 years, I mean probably 8 years playing Diablo 2.
Mm-hmm.
I have played that game so much. I mean it's disgusting over the years how many hours I put into Diablo 2. And I never once made a non-Battle.net character, not a single time, ever. Never clicked that button. And I'm really enjoying Torchlight. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, it's a really fun single-player game. It just seems silly to me to not be willing to accept that you can play a single-player game and have fun just because you've played another game in this genre that is primarily multiplayer. I think they've done a great job. I think they've made this game... They've succeeded where they need to, which is on, as Nick, as you said, the immediacy, on the feel, on the overall world coherency is great. It allows you to play with a fluency that is something I love about games like this. I mean, I love feeling this in control of my character.
Yeah.
That I'm constantly managing things. I'm constantly moving around. I'm constantly thinking about where I'm positioned relative to the enemies. You play it on an easier difficulty, and you can stand there and shoot the guys. I mean, it's... Just what this genre does well. It's so good at scaling itself to how you want to play it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I like about this game is that it does get back to that Diablo thing where you're moving down and down and down, and then that's it. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of hope that with the MMO,
they
have
at least some of that in there.
I hope that it's not as literal of an MMO as you might imagine, that the overworld is kind of kept to some kind of sane minimum of exploration. I don't know. I feel like the strength of these games is not that, you know, is not.
You want to go into a dungeon?
Yeah I want to be in a dungeon.
I mean, as
most of
as
the time, I should be in a dungeon, and then the rest of the time, I'm in a town.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the big difference between Diablo 1 and 2 is that in Diablo 2, you go to different cities, but all it's really doing is shifting what it looks like.
I mean,
you're still starting in the hub and then branching off into a dungeon immediately.
Yeah.
Although the descending is sort of a unique... The never-ending descent is still kind of a unique thing that has not been done very often.
Yeah, I mean, if you think of like the Act 2 in Diablo 2, if that was an area, that desert, if that was an area between that town and another town, I don't know if that would be as satisfying to fight in.
Yeah, well, that was also, you know, I mean, it's funny, for how amazingly lasting of a game Diablo 2 is, some of that content was awful. You know, it's Diablo 2's, I think about this a lot, because I never don't have fun when I'm playing. As much as, like, you can complain about stuff in Diablo 2, I never don't have fun when I'm doing it. But Act 2 and Act 3, I don't have very many fond memories of. I mean, for me, but it's bullshit, really, because when I was playing them, I was still having the goddamn time of my life.
Yeah.
But I just mean, in terms of, like, on a relative basis... You know, it's less interesting.
They are the least interesting acts for sure. But yeah, I don't know.
But I mean, you know, again, it's a million caveats there because I still played through them 1,000 times and fucking never.
I guess what I'm afraid of with the MMO is if you imagine like any of those acts and you're going through these large, you know, open areas. I mean, the acts in Diablo 2 where you're in open land, you know, sections is probably. Yeah. The closest thing to an MMO overworld that you've seen in these games to date. And I don't know if there were like 30 people running to kill the same guy that I just was, you know, I don't, That to me is a little scary. What I would prefer is just a town with several instance dungeons, and I can group up and
Guild Wars kind of thing.
I want a Guild Wars kind
of
thing.
You want vehicles.
Record scratch.
Yeah. I want to travel to a different planet.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Fly an X-Wing.
Sweet.
Torchlight MMO. Ignition and T-minus.
Yeah. I don't know. That's cool that they're doing that, though. I hope it's fun.
Yeah, it's hard to know, because, I mean, even by his own admission, they haven't done much actual production work on it. They've kind of done some design, but they have, you know, the game's basically starting now. So who knows? I mean, they say they want it out in 18 months, which seems insane, but they made this entire thing start to finish in 11 months.
Yeah.
So they've got their core tech. They've got sort of assets to build from. They've got gameplay systems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they can do it. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it ended up being more like 24 or 36 months, but maybe not 36, but
35.
But, yeah, we'll see. I'm curious. I don't know. For now, Torchlight's awesome. I can't wait to play. Well, I'm going to probably play through the game several times. I'm really excited to do a hardcore character. I've never done a hardcore character.
Right,
we
were talking about this. Yeah.
Actually, I think I have. There's no way I never did that.
For like five minutes.
Well, I mean, I did it probably for a few levels and then just kind of whatever. Right. I just want to get on Battle.net with my friends. But I always felt like I sort of just... It's funny how focused my Diablo experience was. Like, I played for so goddamn long.
Yep.
It was all like the same thing.
I pretty much played the same build.
That character.
Hey, a Meteor Sorceress. Yes.
Oh, really?
All right.
I did
the same build every time.
I would say about 50% of my builds were the Sorceress.
Yeah.
And then the other ones were kind of spread out amongst different things. But the Sorceress was my main class.
Yep.
Yeah. And actually that leads
in... You guys are so predictable.
I know. And we're both playing the Alchemist and Torchlight.
I know. That was kind of sad.
The mod component of this game is cool. I hope that this game achieves enough of a critical mass that at least a couple sort of notable projects come out of it that are...
Well, I mean, you can create your own spells. Conceivably, somebody could create an entire...
You can create your own particle effect.
You can create your own... Right. Well, I'm not saying if somebody could create the Sorceress class.
I mean, basically
right,
what
I mean, it's just in this in a community like this, though, you're going to end up with a bunch of sort of weird stuff willy-nilly.
Yeah, right.
But I hope that it catches on enough that a few...
actual good things
come
out.
A few solid projects at any scale congeal enough that there are a couple.
I see.
If someone said, we're going to band together and we as a collective group are going to make four additional classes, and that team does a solid enough job that sort of like becomes a de facto
expansion.
That'd be awesome. That's the sort of project that I could see a mod kit like they're developing working really well.
And when you look at what people have done for like the Total War series, for example, where people take... you know, use mods to just make incredible things.
Yep.
I mean, entire new campaigns or entire historical
units and things like that.
Yeah, and sort of going in there and sort of fixing all of the historical fudging that the Creative Assembly did for gameplay terms. You know, these guys will go in and just make it a whatever it needs to be as accurate as possible for the dudes who actually care about that. Stuff like that's awesome.
Well, yeah,
and that's,
this game, the fact that they're putting out what sounds like a really robust...
their full editor. I've used it, actually. It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's nice.
It makes me hope that type of audience is attracted to this game because it sounds like it would be a good match. And I mean, obviously, it seems like from a development standpoint, it's what they're hoping for.
I mean, basically what I want, people think of other stuff, but the things I'm hoping come out and I suspect will... are one, like, crazy nightmare hardcore dungeon. You know what I mean?
Those, of course, will exist. That's the first thing some guy's going to make.
Exactly. Uses the base kind of underlying classes. Doesn't invent a new game.
But then it's just you think you're good?
Yeah, exactly. I love that shit. If I've already talked about this in a past cast, then tell me to stop. But did I ever talk about the Calculator Mario games?
I think you might have talked about
that. Maybe like episode three.
Like super hardcore user maps.
Yeah.
I loved that shit where you get so good at a given game that just someone has to invent like insane horror houses of just...
I mean, there are those for actual Mario games now where you see
the
Mario 1 and 3 and Mario World just like
just
like rape dungeons, basically. It was Mario... No! This is the worst. Yeah. Every block is invisible or whatever.
Right.
Especially now that... sort of YouTube and video capture, like, I guess, kind of culture exists in games.
Yeah.
That sort of the notoriety of that sort of crazy thing can rise up in a way that it never could before. Right. Just like where you play that level for yourself and just get destroyed even after beating your head against the wall for like 3 hours. And then you watch a video on YouTube. It's just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, fine. You are good at a game.
I know. It kills. It's funny. I played all that old Mario stuff before. Like YouTube, obviously, far long before YouTube was around or anything. And it's, well, I just, you know, obviously, but it's crazy to think about that now. And the fact that I was literally doing that purely, I mean, it sounds stupid, but purely just because I just wanted a Mario game that would fucking kick my ass and like that I would eventually persevere through. And it's funny because I don't play games for that reason at all these days anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But it was weird. Like it's an experience that I really only had for a very short window in my life, but it was really interesting.
That window, like, when you were in trigonometry.
It was it was when I was in math class. But yeah, so that would be cool. And then, you know, I just want to see someone make a whole new game. I mean, I'd like to see someone make the sort of something totally different than what Torchlight is. I mean, it really is an extremely robust editor. It's like I mentioned in the interview, anyone who's used Unreal Engine 3, it's got a system similar to the visual scripting system called Kismet in Unreal Engine 3. It's not obviously as like polished and crazy as that, because it's not made by a company making a professional engine for commercial use, but, well, they're commercial use, but
yeah.
But it's great. I mean, it's very intuitive. It's got all the stuff they use to make the game. Like, you can get all your logic in there. You can replace any asset you want. People could make a whole new game with this one. That's really cool.
Or they'll probably just remake Diablo.
Well, that'd be cool too.
That would be cool too.
But I don't know. I feel like this, one of the reasons I'm particularly optimistic about the mod scene for this game is because I don't think there has been another editor like this for a game like this. Certainly nothing this extensive. Nothing where the developers are just giving you their own full editing suite.
It needs the combination of the player base and the interested authors.
Well, but by that I mean guys who are accustomed to making custom content and making mods. I'm wondering if some of them will become interested just because it's sort of a new thing.
Just because there's a readily available large SDK, basically.
That isn't just another first-person shooter editor. You know, like guys who like making mod content, custom content, and this is something that it isn't just Crytek or Unreal or IdTech or whatever. I mean, it's just
top-down
totally
stuff,
separate thing.
It's hard to think of a lot of examples of that. Like, I think there were some like Fallout add-on things that people tried to hack together,
really?
But I don't think any of them are very good. Because there just weren't any tools.
Yeah,
but
well, this is nice.
But now there's tools.
Yes, we have the tools, the soft tools.
Oh yeah. Hey, it's I don't know. It's cool. I hope this game is successful.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. I definitely might have played it.
You know, for people who don't know anything about Diablo or this game, why you should play this is that it is a game that doesn't hit you in the face with story or any of that other bullshit. Right. It's just a fucking game. Yeah. You play it and, you know, you're clicking and you go through things and they're monsters and you get loot and stuff and that's it. There's no fucking like...
If the fact that Chris and Nick have combined dedicated basically an hour and a half of our week to talking about this game on record is not enough. Baboo.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Yep, this game, it's funny, this game interrupted my Demon's Souls, also a great game.
Interrupted your Demon's Souls?
It interrupted my Demon's Souls.
My Demon's Souls.
Which is also a fantastic game, but it's funny because they
You've
share...
You've just been slicing dudes in dungeons for
I know,
a while
exactly, there. Yeah, right, they're both, they appeal to similar parts of the brain, but it's hilarious how different they are, and like, in every way, while still being... sort of the same point to the game.
Right.
They're both basically Diablo clones.
But one of them will just... No, it's funny. The funny thing about Demon's Souls is my initial impression of it was like if someone had invented Diablo without ever playing Diablo. Like, you know what I mean? Like, not trying to make an accessible game or anything, you know? Like, it's not. I mean, like, it's proud of how unaccessible it is, and it's what makes the game good, but it's also what makes the game infuriating before you understand what makes it good.
Yeah.
Torchlight's not like that at all.
No.
I mean, you fucking get in there and you're going. It gets hard. I mean, you know, there are times when you'll die more, but it feels actually a little easier than Diablo to me, but maybe that's just because I'm used to playing this kind of game. I'm going to I'm gonna do it on the harder difficulty, the hardest one next. But
the other thing, though, just real quick.
Yeah.
For people who have played Diablo, there are some cool additions, like the dog is cool.
It's great.
The dog is really cool. You can give him spells, and he'll pick up stuff.
My dog can raise zombies and count fireballs.
Yeah, exactly. And
fuck you, Peter Molyneux. This dog taught me how to love.
Yeah. And you can learn spells like Diablo 1, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, there are little things in there like that are just nice. You can enchant stuff all the time. I mean, there's just, you know.
Yeah. They basically took every single.
Yeah. They just threw it all together and it's just there.
From
and,
Diablo.
Yeah.
And they're just like, get it all in there.
Yeah.
Like there's.
Maximum Charcy, basically.
Right, exactly. like there's enchantment, there's gems.
Jake has no idea.
There's what's going on.
There's the, what do you call it when you combine the items?
Whatever
they call it.
Transmute.
There's just like all that crap that was in Diablo.
Yep.
The only exception being runes, I guess, aren't in there.
Right.
Pretty much all those other systems, they just threw them all in, and it's pretty fun. It is like the most extreme loot game I've played in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is
just,
all
you're just
about
looting
that.
All over the place.
Yeah, and even but even more so than Diablo. I mean, this game is so based around loot.
Yeah.
But it does it really well. It knows how to do it well. And I, you know, it's got the stupid gems you can combine and level them up into better gems.
Right.
I enjoy that a lot, collecting the stupid bullshit gems and leveling them up. I enjoy it way more than using the actual gems in my weapons to make them better, which is what they're supposed to be for. I just like collecting them.
I love trying to describe this game. Like,
I know.
I was trying to describe what Diablo is. Like, you take these gems and you put them in a cube, and then you hit the transmutation button, and they're combined into a super gem, which is then placed as a socket into your
cube.
This sounds way less awesome now.
Yeah,
people are canceling their pre-orders. It's not too late now, bitch.
There aren't any synergies in Torchlight. I don't know.
It doesn't have runes, but I love collecting colored gems. What are you talking about?
But you know.
But also, you said moments ago that you have a dog who can raise zombies.
Right. The reality is the way these games work means you don't have to do any of that shit if you don't want to. I mean, there's no. The only required system in this game ever is kill the guy you're supposed to kill. I mean, you know, what weapons you use to do that or what spells or anything. There's absolutely no mandatory.
Right.
Stuff going on at all. It's entirely just whatever you want
to
do.
You don't have to be intelligent.
Yeah. On the complete other end of the spectrum, I've been playing Uncharted 2.
Which requires a lot of intelligence to...
what are you thinking about that game?
It's not... I think I was correct in assuming it's not my kind of game.
Yeah.
It's an extremely...
I wouldn't say it's my kind of game either, really, but yeah, keep going.
It's extremely well made. I mean, like, there are times when I really am like just you get to some of these vistas and you look out and it really is breathtaking. And that I will admit, like, I was completely taken by surprise in that respect. I actually did not expect to be as impressed by how gorgeous this game can be.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, amazing job on that, Naughty Dog. It really is actually goddamn phenomenal
to me,
but oh no! Go
amazing
ahead.
Job on that, Naughty Dog.
You Naughty Dog. Is that the Naughty Dog? Just
like don't mention it.
But you were going to say something, Nick?
When I think about this game, I don't know. This isn't much of a spoiler. There's the
I just wish that they hadn't made that guy be dead.
Yeah. No, the scene with the crazy Hindu statue.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
To me, that room kind of sums up Uncharted 2 for me, where I walk in and I'm like, wow, this is an amazing looking room.
Uh-huh.
And oh, great, there's no combat. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then what the hell am I supposed to do? And wait, I have to like climb up a thing and it's not really that clear what I'm supposed to do.
I like that room.
Really?
Yeah.
I had a lot of problems with it, and I talked to a lot of people who were also confused. I don't know. There are a lot of moments in that game where I am, you know, like you said, awestruck. But then there are a lot of holes in the game design where it's just this doesn't make any sense, or this is kind of weird and silly. You know?
Yeah, but I agree with you completely. But I liked that room actually. It was the only time. At least as far as I've played through the game so far, it was one of the only times when I actually had to sort of stop,
look at a thing and examine something. No, I did like that part of it. What I'm saying is the first like ladder or whatever you have to find in that room, I couldn't find it at all.
Sure, fair enough.
And that just happened to me a lot in that game.
That's
where I just,
the worst one that happens in a game.
Yeah. I mean,
that did happen to me sometimes in that game, but that. In those cases, it bothers me because it's like there really is literally only one place to get where you're going, but you're outside in this huge area where it looks like, you know, you're in a city. I mean, you should be able to do all kinds of things. You should be able to interact with objects. You should be able to climb
stuff. Well,
that's what I
mean. Yeah. He's a superhuman at sometimes, but then in this room, I can only have the one thing that I have to find. And that frustration is kind of the thing that keeps me from really loving this game.
Same here. And I feel the exact same way. But I really liked that room because that was the one – because – no, because when you're outside...
Terrible example, but...
Well, no, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I just know.
I'm
going
to explain.
Keep going.
So when you're outside, the reason I don't like that is because it doesn't make any sense. Mm. I'm like, well, I can see a million other ways I could go.
When you're in puzzle room, it's okay.
Yeah, it's like, okay. I would be totally confused. I don't know. Like, you're in this room. I mean, this game tries very hard to be sort of an Indiana Jones kind of thing. And in some ways, it succeeds. And when you're outside, I think that's when it doesn't succeed. Like, you shouldn't... I mean... But when I'm in that room, I'm looking at this thing. I'm like, God, that is the moment in Indiana Jones where he just kind of stops and he is baffled for a while and he tries something and it doesn't. And then he kind of looks around and suddenly he gets it. And there was a moment with that statue when I realized, oh, my God, I see exactly what I'm trying to do. Of course, this is what I'm trying to do.
Well,
and then I did it and it was cool. And I felt like I actually had sort of solved this thing. I mean, the game,
I did like
it, does tell you, like, look in your book, there's a thing here.
No,
but
yeah,
I really liked that room. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah,
take that, Brecken.
Well, no, but I understand what you mean.
No. I loved those, what you're describing. It was just, you know, once I found, I knew exactly what I had to do.
Right.
I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Like,
all right, that's fair enough.
You know,
well, you're just a shittier explorer.
Yeah, I just, yeah.
What can I say? I'm way better Indiana Jones than you are, Nathan Drake.
Signed Nathan Drake.
His margin in his middle school notebook.
Yeah.
My overall thing that I just keeps me from really connecting with Uncharted 2 is the positive thing everyone says about it, right, is that it's like,
it's
oh,
like,
my God,
movie.
It's like a movie. And I know there's going to be people who write in like, well, that's not what I like. Okay. I have seen that comment so many times that I'm pretty sure that's what a lot of people think. So that is clearly what this game is going for to some extent. That is what a lot of people see in it. My problem with it is that it so easily breaks the illusion all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, every single time you jump off the thing, that's exactly when it crumbles. The whole first sequence is like that. And it's like, well, I could hang on this thing forever. And, you know, they're choosing to do that, right? I mean, they don't have to do that. They could mess with those timings. They could have it wait longer after you come off. They could
it's the roller coaster
not
ride.
Have everyone break.
I mean, it's the adventure game style of storytelling, but with all real-time events, like your actual method of interaction.
Right.
It still is well, I was going to say it's like the end of Full Throttle, but in that the car actually goes off a cliff if you wait long enough. But it's that, you know, everyone's going to sit around breathing until you make it look cool by doing the thing that you're supposed to do. It's just in this case, that's all sort of grappling mechanics.
You're right, but the difference is usually in adventure games, it is implausible, right? You can wait forever in an adventure game. My problem is that I don't like it, even in adventure games, when it's done in a situation that you're supposed to believe.
Right, where it's a life-threatening situation, but then
life-threatening, immediate importance.
You go make dinner, and you come back, and everyone is still sort of in the fighter stance looking at each other. Yeah.
And that, when adventure games do that, it does bother me. And in this game, it does bother me. And
I wasn't trying to say that it's good. No.
But some people have that problem with adventure games, too, and I think that's a fair criticism as well.
It was kind of a simple, kind of slightly, face-punching solution, but I really liked that in Full Throttle, the car will just drive off a cliff if you don't solve that puzzle long enough until you want to commit suicide because the stupid car is driving off a cliff.
Yeah, and some people hate those, too, for other valid reasons.
It's a difficult dilemma. I mean, I don't know how much I want to spoil, but the scene we were talking about...
Nick and I were discussing this, yeah.
Yeah, well, we can just say there's a scene where you're carrying a guy who's wounded.
Right.
I don't know if you've gotten to this point, Jake.
Right? I haven't yet.
Okay, well, anyway, I won't go into detail, but you're getting... There are bullets coming at you from all over the place.
Yeah. Are they just an environment loop of bullets?
No, it's not. Well, it's actual people shooting you.
Well, that's good.
But you're getting shot like 1,000 times in the face. And
however, this guy has taken a single bullet
right.
hit that's been modeled
now,
into
that's
his...
been a big complaint about Uncharted, hasn't it? Of just sort of
probably
the number of bullets that everyone can take.
The problem though is
times,
well, until the story narratively, a narrative bullet appears. Right.
The problem though is what I was thinking about is the first thing I thought of was, well, maybe they should have just done something where it is spawn bullets, where there's just some effect where there are bullets flying, but they're not really hitting you all the time.
Like the actual
maybe
Indiana Jones ride,
right?
Where you're supposed to believe the arrows that are coming out of the walls,
right.
Yeah.
are missing you. Yeah.
But the problem with that is that you would end up with the adventure game thing, which is
you go make your Jiffy Pop, or whatever,
exactly.
And you watch the screen,
right? Yeah.
And you just watch.
Yeah. I mean, that would be incredibly lame. So how do you solve
that? Paradox indicates.
Yeah.
Trying to recreate that experience maybe isn't what a game
exactly right. Well, yeah, it is
like. When it works, it's really nice. Like, I mean, the very first puzzle, when you're climbing up the boxcar, if that was all timing-based, that would be the worst chain of jumping puzzles in the entire world. But the fact that it's not pulls you out of that situation, and striking that balance is really tough. But I like that there's a game that is at least that is sort of trying to give you that, like... I can't think of a game that wouldn't basically just be the most killer, frustrating, like...
Right. Well, Dragon's Lair is you
but
know,
I mean, like, well, I mean, if there is,
you, which is
you,
garbage,
you scramble up this boxcar that is on its way falling off a cliff. You would need to get the precision of like the super last levels of N plus of your ability to sort of jump and world manipulate, and then people aren't going to play your game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not.
I mean, there have been.
I wish that it wasn't that your guy would hang off of a pole forever. But yeah. I also liked the fact that I at least could, in some capacity, participate in that experience.
Yeah.
But that it's not as fulfilling as when that sort of situation is real, though.
Well, no, I mean,
or in real life when you wake up on a train car. Right.
Well, no, what you say is completely valid, and I want to make it clear what I'm not trying to do is play backseat designer and say this is what they should have done. Mm-hmm. I'm not at all trying to do that. I'm purely speaking from the perspective of a player who's saying, regardless of whether they made the best choice or not, and they probably did make the best choice, and they did a great job at the choice they decided to go through.
Make it,
right. It just, for me personally, mm-hmm. It's not very effective. And I guess it just means maybe you can't please me when it comes to this kind of game, which
it's
not really anyone's fault, I guess, but I just...
There's so many different people trying to solve that problem. Like, yeah. I was just thinking Brutal Legend in the beginning where you're driving on the highway and...
Right.
There's that solution was to have somebody go, oh, look out, you know, it's crumbling on the left side of the screen, you
right.
know, like sort of warning you ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. God, I had something else I was going to say too, and I totally forgot.
No. Yeah.
But I mean, no, I mean, Jake,
Valve has moments that are like
right.
what Uncharted has, but Valve also keeps it really controlled. They just have the benefit of it being a first person scenario, so they don't have to worry about creating a situation where you're like physically like hand to object
right,
grappling
right.
your way on surfaces.
They fudge a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but Jake, I totally appreciate you coming from it. I'm glad that there's someone on the podcast who doesn't feel the way I do, because otherwise,
douchebag
central. But
in all honesty, I do prefer like if there is that sort of a style of game like this where it is all about world exploration, I much more prefer being able to find my own route or, you know, feel like there are really strong repercussions for my actions if I fuck up. I also, maybe partly just because I make adventure games all the time, I like sitting down and just being like, this is an extremely authored experience that is still interactive, and they did an amazing job of it. And I found that really fun, even though it doesn't like fulfill you to the core the way that a really good, super, super high agency
right.
your like sort of choice driven version of that could.
No, that's fair enough. I understand like what the
it
appeal is.
Sparks a different brain part.
Well, yeah.
I really like when you're just moving around the world that you just sort of the game does what I want it to be doing, just sort of by me mushing things around and pressing a button. But I do miss a little bit of the like Prince of Persia: Sands of Time. the controls were, like, it was sort of the first game that I felt like was all about that style of sort of 3D world climbing stuff. And because of that, it was a little bit crunchier. Yeah, like it was a little bit suckier.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was slightly more of the original Prince of Persia. Like, oh crap, my jump is like slightly mistimed. Right. And then the guy. But
playing Uncharted, this is the first game sort of in that style that I've played actually since Sands of Time. I didn't really play the Prince of Persia sequels or Assassin's Creed, and I only ever played like an hour of the Mirror's Edge DLC because I'm a douche, apparently.
Right.
But just the fact that it's so smooth, I did feel like I was missing a little bit of the detailed agency from Sands of Time, where it's like, I'm going to go now. You're going to jump off and you're going to grab that thing when I press the button a second time. And in this, Drake's just like, woohoo!
Yeah.
And then he's already there.
Does the Mario jump.
Like, he's already climbed up the next ledge. Like, wait a minute. Oh, yeah. I was just pressing X over and over again.
But whenever I have to swing from a bar in Uncharted 2, I pretty much just press the X and then I know that it will insert it for me.
Yeah.
I
mean,
Sands of Time is one of my favorite games of all time. And the thing, and in a lot of ways, it's as linear as Uncharted 2. But the thing I like about it is that on the granular level, I keep saying this and fucking it up. It really demands
the granular level.
It is a little sort of crunchier, as you say, or like sloppier or something. Yeah. But it does demand you excel.
Well, you know, there is something to that.
It doesn't fill in as many gaps, and because of that, it doesn't feel as smooth. But it does also require you to bend to its will a little more and get a little more precise with what it specifically wants you to do. Whereas when Uncharted 2, when something fucks up and you miss a jump or when your guy can't do a thing, I end up blaming the game. Whereas in Sands of Time, I would only blame the game when it was really egregious, and I frequently ended up blaming myself for not being precise enough with what I was doing. Although in Sands of Time, I also said, fuck you, stupid piece of shit game, pretty often. Uncharted, more of my frustration has been with the fact that either he's just roboting his way through it, or that a surface that I thought I could go to wasn't tagged arbitrarily, and then I get mad. Like, why aren't you magically jumping onto this little ledge over here?
Can I bring up Far Cry 2?
Please do. You're talking about how a hand reaches out and grabs the doorknob?
There's chances left to talk about it, so take one while you can.
Well, just real quick, related to jumping across things, I was playing Far Cry 2, and I just happened upon this huge city, which is weird in that game. And
had you not found
it?
Was
it the one in the mountains?
Yeah, lots of huts and just it kind of goes up into the mountains, and it's a really gorgeous setting. But anyway, I ended up in this huge firefight because there are, I guess, 1,000 guys with guns in that city.
And they all
like
hate
that's
you.
That's pretty much who all who lives in that city, I guess, are guys who use RPGs.
That's how Far Cry 2 works.
Yeah, it's a family of snipers. But so I
the snipers.
Yeah, meet the snipers.
Starring Tom Arnold
as sniper.
Anyway, you found this place.
Yeah, I found this mysterious place with enemies.
Sniperton.
And Sniperville. And I was on a roof, and I hadn't jumped across anything in this game at all. But and the game is clearly not meant to be a run and jump. But I ended up just kind of, while getting shot at from 1,000 different directions, leaping across these buildings like something out of the Matrix or whatever. And it was amazing. Like, the game was not built for that at all, but because it just happened spontaneously in this engine that, you know, just wasn't meant for it. It was great. I couldn't believe that I pulled it off.
Experience.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that I pulled it off. And I jumped off the building and ended up in this alley.
Idle Thumbs praises surprising emergent event in Far Cry 2.
Stop the presses.
No, but I know what you mean. That stuff is amazing when you suddenly realize you're doing something in a game that someone did not sit there and decide this person will do this right here with these hotspots. Yeah, I mean, that stuff is great. I love it.
Yeah. I don't know what that added to the conversation other than Far Cry 2 is great.
That's right. We got to get that in.
Yeah, sorry. Okay.
You guys want to take a break for a second, or are you going to keep talking?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I mean, Uncharted 2. Like, I hope I don't sound like too much of a douche about it.
I think that you're being a little self-conscious.
Yeah, probably. I'm basically enjoying it, but I.
Yeah, no.
It isn't my kind of game, so it's. I guess the fact that I don't just hate it is pretty impressive. Because I don't hate it.
I feel like I'm just being kind of a douche about this, but I'll just say that the fact that I don't hate it is pretty impressive.
Well, you know.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Chris Ramo.
Taking a break. Video game. So that was a nice break.
Yes, we broke.
Yep. Now we're back
lots
together.
Of embargoes.
We broke some embargoes. We were just talking about Prince of Persia.
Yeah, we were.
Speaking of Prince of Persia, Nick, I heard you watched a Prince of Persia trailer.
I did. It was pretty good.
Really?
No.
I was surprised.
Yeah, no.
No, I'm not.
So what's this game called? Prince of Persia?
The movie.
And Jordan
Prince of Persia, the movie. This isn't a video game.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Oh, it's Prince of Persia, Sands of Time.
Right.
Calling back to our previous discussion about Prince of Persia, Sands of Time.
Oh, man, we're segging like mad.
God.
And Jordan Mechner was at this trailer.
He was there,
It's weird that they held an event.
Did he have a The Last Express t-shirt on?
No, he didn't.
Did anyone ask him about The Last Express?
I was going to be that guy, and then I thought maybe I shouldn't.
Okay. Will you ever be creating a sequel to your classic underappreciated...
Somebody actually said, if this movie is successful, will we see a Karateka, or what's it? I can't even fucking say the name of that game. But
Karateka,
yeah.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah. In fact, there was a whole discussion on how to pronounce that game is what that is.
Well, he's making a new game. I broke that news. It was me.
No, I meant the thing was a movie. Oh. It's a movie thing.
Oh, you see, you had a scoop?
Well, this was years ago. I mean, this was like a year ago.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, they showed them the trailer for the movie with Jake Gyllenhaal as the prince. Look on your face. No, what?
It's a suspicious move.
It is a suspicious move.
It inspires doubt.
Did he grapple a pole?
Well, he did.
Did he have to like find an item to slot into a thing?
Did he drink from a fountain?
He pressed a jewel on a dagger and he turned into Sand Guy.
Wait, what? What does he mean he turned into Sand Guy?
Well, when he goes back in time, he like... I don't know.
Oh, he turns into like sand particles that go whooshing?
Yeah, lots of sand particles in this trailer.
They don't just... take the film and just run it backwards for a few seconds. That would be closer to the game.
Yeah, they may.
They also licensed
they
Blinks the Time Sweeper.
So can you say anything about the trailer? I mean, is it worth saying anything about it? Is it just a... I don't know how... Why are we
talking about
that? That's an idiotic thing to ask you.
Huh?
I retract anything I just said. That's retarded.
You pressed your finger onto a dagger and turned into sand for a second.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So let me ask a better question. Did Jordan Mechner have anything interesting to say?
It wasn't the most interesting thing in the world. It was mostly, you know, generic movie questions, what was it like working with someone? But, it was kind of funny to hear him talk about Jerry Bruckheimer, at a couple of points. It sounds like to me, I don't know. My impression of the trailer is that it's just a big Jerry Bruckheimer movie, with the prince and, Alfred Molina as the crazy sidekick sense of humor dude. It might be okay. It might be one of those video game movies that sort of just squeaks by, but, it didn't look like anything special. That's for sure.
I know Disney seems to kind of want it to be the next Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, maybe. Sure. I don't know if Jake Gyllenhaal has the Johnny Depp charisma.
Johnny Depp. Yeah.
There was banter between Jake Gyllenhaal and the princess.
Well, there's
thing.
Always going to be some banter.
There was some banter. There was a little banter. No,
you sidestepped your own point about it. Wasn't you going to say something about
Jerry Bruckheimer?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was funny. I mean, there were a couple of points. Somebody said, like, what was it like, Jordan, working with Jerry Bruckheimer? Maybe that wasn't the tone that they used. It was more like, so what was it like working with Jerry Bruckheimer? And he was like, he just sort of looked down and smiled and thought he's the kind of guy who always thinks about what he's going to say, carefully. and he just sort of smiled.
You may not know what that's like listening to the Idle Thumbs podcast.
Right. Yeah. He thinks
Trust
about
me,
what he's going
a,
to say before he says it.
It's an extremely satisfying experience.
Yeah. But no, he just sort of smiled and looked up and he, Jerry likes big movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said that a couple of times throughout this. It sounds like the way he described his involvement was he wrote the first draft of the screenplay and that was it.
18 script doctors called in to.
Yeah. It's one of those things.
Focus test the shit out of it.
Yeah. He was pretty excited that Ben Kingsley and Alfred Molina were in it.
Yeah. I'd be excited if my screenplay had those guys in it.
Yeah. But then again, Ben Kingsley is sort of like doing everything in the world.
Yeah, everyone was really excited when Ben Kingsley signed up for the latest Uwe Boll movie.
Yeah. Yes. He's the kiss of death at this point, I guess.
He's one of those guys who's sort of simultaneously a potentially...
Right, like, yeah, he does have the craft.
But he also is one of those it's a job guys.
Right.
Right, where he's like, well, whatever. Yep. I mean, I'm in a movie, I'm working. Getting some money, and I'm working.
Yeah, Ben Kingsley could show up and just destroy everyone.
Right.
Yes.
Or he could show up and destroy your film.
Well, he does.
Or your film could be destroyed. Could have been destroying before anyone shut up in either way. What am I talking about?
But yeah, I don't... it's funny how I don't know, the further away Jordan Mechner gets from a Prince of Persia thing, the dumber it always looks to me. You know? Yeah, I mean, seriously. Like,
it's true. It is true.
And it's not deliberate. Like, I remember being really excited about Prince of Persia Warrior Within, like, early on. I mean, I remember Idle Thumbs went to E3 and, like, got all excited about it. We're like, oh, man, there's going to be a pirate ship in this game. And we're all stoked. And then the closer it got to release, the more I started seeing it, the stupider I thought it looked. And then by the time it came out, I thought this game looks idiotic. And then
you know, I will say one thing. I did go back and look at his trailer pitch.
I saw that too.
On JordanMechner.com, he posted the trailer that he used to pitch Disney. It's actually fairly close to what ended up being the trailer. I mean, there are actually specific shots in there that were duplicated and used in the movie. But... You know, I mean, it's just an action movie with Jake Gyllenhaal, is my impression of it.
And
but,
sand.
And yeah.
Does it have crazy evil birds
featuring
that sort of
Jake
swoop
Gyllenhaal
forever and then dive
sand.
At you and then turn into sand?
There are no sand monsters.
Is there an
he
elevator
specifically
that,
said there are no sand
you
monsters.
Know, you have to replay 18 times while enemies spawn at you.
Yeah.
The DVD supports that mode.
Nice.
The Blu-ray, pardon.
Yeah.
The times here.
He did talk about sort of... Jordan Mechner, the guy, a little bit. Where,
oh, yeah? Did he say it in those terms? Let me just take a step back. I'm going to tell you about Jordan Mechner, the guy, if you will. He is the person least likely to actually ever say something like
that. But somebody had asked him, like, you know, you're doing movies and games, and like, what are you?
What's it like being you?
Well, they're like, what are you
what
doing?
Are
like,
you? What are you?
What are you? I don't understand. but
he's not human.
Yeah. No, he was just like, you know, I do graphic... I guess he's involved in the Prince of Persia prequel graphic novel or something. Yeah, he's doing...
I have one of the graphic novels. I mean, the first one that came out a year or two ago.
He's, you know, so he wants to just keep doing a little bit of everything, which is what's cool about that
That's what's awesome about him. Yeah. He's one of my favorite game designers who isn't a actual full-time game designer. I mean, I think guys like that are so interesting. You know, they write. He's an artist, like a visual artist, I mean. He's game designer. He has... produced or directed documentary films.
Yeah.
He's just really interesting. I like guys like that who actually pursue various disciplines and actually do different things well.
It makes games seem less stupid.
Yeah, exactly. When
there's someone out there who does many different things and one of them is games, so it's not just like...
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And it's not just his career, and it's not just something that like someone paid him to be the Hollywood guy who comes in and like gets a script credit or whatever.
And I mean, I don't mean this against everyone in the entire world, including me, has the job on the path that I have, but it's not also
just, no, of course.
I love a video game, so I will make one, and that's all that I will ever do.
Right, no, I mean, obviously, like... you,
which is whatever, that's what I am, so...
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, I mean, I never suggest people shouldn't be full-time game designers. But you know, I think it is cool that...
I would never. Your mustache is bristling.
Monocle popping out.
Monocle.
Yeah. Wig.
Wig.
Bow tie spinning.
Well, possibly.
Maybe. You went too far with the bow tie.
Hardly a bow tie.
Monocle popping. What are we talking about?
Recursive. Just, this episode has a twist ending. We're all just scandalized about everything. A twist!
Idle Thumbs isn't ending. Oh, no, it actually is. I'm sorry. Sorry, that was in poor taste, maybe.
That was terrible.
The
spinning bow tie of this conversation.
Yeah.
That was my way of saying we've been talking about the Prince of Persia trailer for a long time.
Yes.
Yeah, why are we doing that?
I don't know. Hot scoops, though. There's a new Prince of Persia game coming out.
Based on the movie?
I don't know. He was just like, I can't confirm anything. But possibly.
Why do we keep doing this? This is horrible. Stop immediately.
Sorry. So anyway, what you're saying is, surprise, successful franchise with movie tie-in has new game.
Yeah. Yep.
Hinted at tantalizingly at press event for film.
Was it? Oh, never mind. I'm not
starring Raul Julia as the prince.
Don't start. Although, actually, a funny thing about Alfred Molina, I knew this, but I forgot he actually was. I mean, one of the inspirations for Prince of Persia was the first 10 minutes of Raiders, and he was in the first 10 minutes of Raiders, so that's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Sweet. It's going to be great. It might be. That trailer, you can't really.
I hate you.
What are you doing? I'm sorry. Yeah, get out of here.
So it's terrible and might be not terrible.
It was just a standard trailer. Who the hell knows?
Yeah, okay. That's fair enough. Cool.
They flew you out, though, to Persia to screen that.
Yep, Bangladesh.
Did you meet the prince? God, why are we doing this? All right. We've been playing Machinarium.
Hey,
yes, we have.
I beat it.
Oh, man.
Whoa.
Good job.
I completed a game. It was really short.
Yeah. I got distracted by all the stuff I was playing when I got Torchlight, so I I have a lot of half-finished games right now, including Machinarium.
Yeah, it's a...
It's cool.
It's a cool game.
It's nice. It's you know, it's the most, like, linear...
It's such a super specific controlled thing.
Right. Yeah, it's like a basically a 2D point-and-click, cool hand-drawn... little adventure game that you got a little robot and you go around and you solve puzzles, and it's, you know, to me it's not even so much a video game, it's more just a cool way to experience an atmosphere and just this art that this guy made, and it's just little things happen. It's just like a sort of a curiosity or something. It's cool. I like it.
Yep.
Anyone who's played the Samorost games, same studio.
It's very much the sort of most pro-grade version of any of the sort of flash room-to-room kind of hidden object adventure games.
Most of which are total bullshit.
The difference between those and this is that this game is really, really impeccably made, and... Right. To make it feel a little bit less like a hidden object game, they make it so you have to steer your little character to different waypoints where...
Yeah, which kind of sucks, actually.
It does suck, but the one redeeming factor to it is that it actually makes you... It gives you
look.
Yeah. And you get like that 3% feeling that you are maybe kind of controlling this character, whereas Samorost, it is like you're playing a web page where it is you're just sweeping the screen with your cursor and then you find something, and then I guess then the guy is literally just a time delayed version of your cursor who goes over and then you find out what he can do. Whereas at least with this, you think, oh, this area, maybe I can investigate it, and then the fog of war lifts basically and you can cursor interact with those things, but it is... It also slows the game down in an annoying way.
No, it's definitely better than Samorost in that respect. But yeah, I mean, it's just a cool...
How far in did you get? Did you get to the point where the city actually sort of opens up and there are like 10 different screens?
No, I haven't gone. I saved the dog.
Oh, okay. Actually, like right after that, you end up getting to a
place... Oh, no, I did get to that point. Yes, I'm in the city now.
With the robot band
Stuff. And I've completed a couple of puzzles.
That did actually surprise me about that game, because I was expecting it to be more like Samorost, where it is just, there is a room, you completely complete the puzzle, you go to the next room, and... Sorry. you get to a point where it is, you've sort of unlocked a bunch of elevators and doors and stairwells and things, and the puzzle, the actual sort of solvable space expands out to about a dozen rooms. I think maybe only 8 or 9, but it starts to get that feeling of an old 2D adventure game for a little while in there.
Where you actually can explore.
Whereas you have to actually sort of remember back to the things that occurred, and things affect things that are spatially very far apart, and that was nice because I don't know, I was surprised that was there, but then at the same time it is just
you have to do the exact
click everything and once and the game is completed, except for occasional there's some mini gamey stuff.
But it is, you know, as much as like as basic as it is as a game, there is some nice curve in there where at the beginning of the game, every single screen is self-contained. Mm-hmm. You don't retain items between them. Then you start having items. Maybe you'll keep an item from screen to screen. Then you start getting to the point where puzzles bleed over from screen to screen, right. And it opens up in a way that kind of slowly introduces you. It's nice, you know, for cool. What it is. It's cool and well made,
and also just
and it looks nice the, and it sounds
the,
nice.
The sort of just general feeling of that world, and what little sort of story and sort of and history and structure of it get told by the time you get to the end of the game is really nice, yeah. And it's nice. It made me wish that there was a more fully realized game in that universe with that style that wasn't... Like, I know that the guys at... What is it? Amantia?
Amanita Design.
Amanita. They obviously like that really, really controlled thing, the Sam Ross thing and this thing where it is just... There's not a lot of agency over your character. Yeah. It's just you click a thing and then they tell you what your character's going to do with it. But right. That world and that style made me wish that there was a more... Even just at least a more traditionally higher agency adventure game where I could dig around in it more. I really wanted to sort of root around in that, which I haven't done an adventure game in a while.
And I also quickly, Nick, was thinking of the soundscape of this game. It sounds really nice. Mm-hmm. Sound design's really good. It's nice to listen to. That reminds me, Nick, when you were playing Torchlight, did you ever try turning the music off?
No.
I did, because as much as I, from what I've played of Diablo 3, I don't like the music nearly as much as I like Torchlight's music. Right. And maybe Diablo 3 has other music.
Yeah.
You know, that's cooler that I haven't heard yet. But based on the few hours we've played of that game so far, I think Torchlight's score is superior. But one thing I like about Diablo 3 is that they sometimes just drop the music out and just let you explore in silence. Mm-hmm. Not silence because there's an excellent soundscape behind it. I tried to simulate... Torchlight has music going all the time. It's Matt Ullman's excellent score. It's always excellent.
Yep.
But I tried just for experimentation to turn off the music and just listen to Torchlight, and it's got a great soundscape under it. Mm. You know, you've got the little drops of water in the background, your dog will occasionally shake, and you hear the clink of the collar and the
notice some of that. Yeah,
it's really nice, and I kind of actually wish, and you know, someone can probably mod this in like 2 seconds, but that the music would occasionally just, when the track ends, instead of looping, it would just kind of,
you would sometimes just get
hear a
the
few
weird
minutes
sort
of just
yeah.
silence. Yeah. And it just, it's cool. I find myself actually going back and forth, and it's great both ways. You get either an amazing soundtrack or you get an amazing soundscape, and it's just, you know, someone playing Torchlight, maybe you want to try that because I thought it was cool.
Yeah. Matt Ullman did all the sounds too. So
he did. Exactly. So that guy is responsible for all the awesome stuff. He really is phenomenally talented.
Yeah. He's pretty cool.
I mean, I didn't want to go into too,
I didn't
too overboard during that interview.
I didn't either.
God, the soundtrack is incredible. I mean, it's just great. Especially the main town theme.
Oh yeah. God. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Just excellent.
Cool.
Also, I said one other thing. This is so stupid. I was trying to find a way to shoehorn this in, and I'm going to. I said the word curiosity during... during the Machinarian discussion, and that actually reminds me of this crazy place I went in Los Angeles. If anyone finds themselves in or near Los Angeles, go to the Museum of Jurassic Technology. It is a crazy, weird thing. It's basically... It's a house. It's on Venice Boulevard, I think. And it's a museum built into basically what is a two-story house. It is essentially a analogous to those, like, I don't know, 17th, 18th century, like, weird pseudo-bullshit curiosity museums where they're all done as if everything in there is real. But you know someone's pulling your leg. Like, someone clearly must have just bullshitted this weird, like, mammoth fossil that could not possibly actually look like what they're claiming it looks like. And the, like, you know, sort of physiological processes behind this could not possibly have been what they claim they are. But maybe it is. It's in a museum, and it looks very real, and it's behind a glass case and stuff. And that's basically what this museum is. It's like a weird, strange, just collection of things, some of which is real and some of which isn't, and it's really hard to tell which is which. Mm. And it's really fascinating. And
some sort of believe it or not situation.
No, because it doesn't present itself like that. It's completely it doesn't. It's not trying to like go like, look at this crazy thing. I mean, it really is just as if you're in a museum and it's saying this is that, and I don't know how to describe it. It's so strange, but there's just weird shit in there. Just strange, weird things mixed with actual real weird things And I would recommend going to it.
What's it called again?
The Museum of Jurassic Technology. They change the exhibits every once in a while. That's been around for about 20 years, I guess. There's like, as far as I can tell, this extremely elaborate, I think, fictional exhibit about the one of the guys who wrote this ridiculous book called like Oblissence or something. And it's this whole bizarre fictional story, but then it's woven in with actual real people. And you'd never know which is which unless you, now that the internet exists and you can look stuff up. But some of it is still hard to verify. I don't know. It's fascinating. It's a bizarre, weird thing. And I would recommend going there. It's sort of a pseudo interactive experience. So I tying it into a video game in that way.
Cool.
Look it up.
You want to disappear for a second and then come back with a reader mail?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right.
Oh, maybe in this break I can just go ahead. I just wanted to plug League of Legends really quickly because that's coming out this week.
Oh, do it.
Yeah.
During this break, Nick will plug League of Legends.
Yeah, no. Seriously, you can go do your thing.
It's coming out.
Yeah, it's coming out. And they added a bunch of stuff recently, and it's really good.
What did they add?
They added a new map, which is a big event.
Oh, the two-lane map?
Yeah, which is a big event for a Dota game because it's like, you know.
Yeah, because Dota has one map? Or like,
well, yeah. I mean, you're messing with a very tested formula, but... Right. It's actually really fun. They did a really good job with that, and that's a free game that people should try. If they don't know anything about Dota, I would just go give it a shot because you might like it.
And it's free.
So there's League of Legends.
Good job.
Okay.
We're just basically, as Auto Thumbs winds down, I guess basically what we're doing here is just plugging the shit out of PC games by small developers that we want to succeed.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm comfortable with that.
That's fine.
Let's take a break. Video game. So
thanks, Nick.
Oh,
Kenny Lucas,
what you're gonna be doing community coordination? So it's time for us to just start heaping undue blame all over you guys. Yeah. Stuff you're not in control of.
All right. So Kenny Lucas writes, "Dear Thumbs, you seem to be the experts on video games thing. How do you feel the word video games should be spelled out? Should it be video games with a space in between?
Two words. No two words.
There you go.
Correct. Sorry.
Moving on.
That's amazing.
Anyone who has the Idle Thumbs Journal of Games will know that this is our opinion because we have an entire broadsheet spread dedicated to video games being two words.
Yep. The best spread in the paper.
It's also discussed in our latest webcomic.
All right, so Steve Farrell writes, "Hey, Thumbs, I'm really interested in Dragon Age, but I'm torn between the console and PC versions." I guess this is like the weird like letter to the editor, like or Dear Abby, like
advice. Right. Yeah, right.
Day I'm really of torn. Emails. Well, because I had to get rid of all the emails. Well, not get rid of, but most
we
of them.
We had to erase without reading all of it. No.
Most of them would just make us sad to read, so... He says, "I'm really interested in Dragon Age, but I'm torn between the console and PC versions. It is much more comfortable for me to play on 360, but I was a huge Baldur's Gate fan, so I feel like I'm doing myself a disservice not playing it on PC. I'm torn because I want to pre-order it for the extras, but I can't decide. Will you guys get this game? If so, what platform? Love the show. Keep up the good work."
Steve. P.S. Fucknick.
He may not know.
Sorry, that's your new pen name? P.S. Fucknick?
Yep.
I'm definitely looking forward to this game, and I'm definitely getting it on PC.
Get it on PC, says Idle Thumbs.
Least surprising answer ever.
It's a shock.
I mean,
Well, there is no overhead camera for the 360 version. You're locked to that third-person thing. So if that's not important to you, but even beyond that, the controls you weren't a big fan of?
I was fine with the controls. I didn't personally like them, but I think
it's
they would be
not
perfectly
optimal.
Fine. Like, I think the controls would be fine on the console, but you're limited in how many camera choices you have.
Yeah.
And you also have to do radial menus. I just don't really like radial menus very much. Like,
come to think of it, I thought the console controls worked, but I think
if you were fine with Mass Effect or something on a console, you'd probably be fine with it. It's just the difference is, on the PC, you do get... I mean, if the guy's a big Baldur's Gate fan, you might want the option to play it like Baldur's Gate, which you won't be able to do on the console. It's... I don't know. It's up to you. I mean, I think people will probably enjoy it both ways. I definitely would only... I would only get this game on PC, but...
It's actually all launching simultaneously, too.
It is.
So
yeah, even on the PS3. Yeah. They were
it's a rare thing these days,
but,
I guess.
Yeah.
But,
also, I mean...
Multi-plat.
For what it's worth, like, some of the texture work on this game on the 360 is garbage.
Yeah,
at least, I don't know.
In that press preview, it was
Yeah, but it's a huge game. I can't see them going through and doing another pass.
Well, it's
going
to be on using the HD DVD attachment.
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure it'll be fine either way, but know that unlike most multi-platform ports, there is actually a gameplay system difference.
Nick was amused by the mentioning of an HD DVD attachment. Remember how
I spaced for a second, and then you said that, and it kind of came back at it, yeah. No, I have it. Yeah, it's great.
You have one?
The HD DVD attachment?
Do you have any HD DVDs?
I do.
What are they?
I can't remember.
Prince of Persia movie trailer.
I think it came with King Kong.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, actually it did.
Yeah. I think I may have two others.
I don't have that thing.
Children of Men, maybe? I don't know.
John Race. Hey, Thumbs. Really enjoy the podcast. Your discussion on episode 48 in space on keyboard overlays, game back-ins, and maps reminded me of a pack-in, really more of a pain in the ass, since he was no value to the consumer. Still, it blew my mind as a wee nerdling. The Commodore 64 version of Elite had the copy protection scheme where it would draw a set of characters on the screen visually distorted. Only by holding a weird plastic prism up to the screen could the unscrambled code be deciphered so that if you entered it and launched the game, it was wizardry, if you will. It appears it was called Lens Lock and that someone had done a much better job documenting it. I can't speak or read today.
Documentering.
As well as some other classically bad copy protection methods. That's crazy. I never had a thing like that.
No.
There was like the wheels, and there are all kinds of wheels.
I plugged it into a TV that was far bigger than the one that shipped the machine.
I was unable to play the game. I guess at that time, they probably assumed...
No TVs existed that were bigger than that one exact size.
Very few existed that were big.
I don't know. I thought that...
I mean, a big screen TV was a huge deal at that time.
Yeah. I don't know enough about the Commodore 64 hardware, but if it's anything like the Apple II and other computers of that time, you could plug it into a household TV or into like the 12-inch monitor that was branded.
Oh, right.
But maybe this system is a super cool system.
I mean, if it's just a lens, it shouldn't make that much of a difference.
A majestic lens. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I don't either. Let's see. Paul, or Locally Unseen, I guess as he calls himself, writes, "You're out of Thumbs. Like a lot of people, I recently started listening to the show, and I've been listening to the older episodes to catch up."
Welcome to episode 49.
I love the show, and it's the only podcast I regularly listen to now. Oh, because it blows all the other ones away. Okay, so his question is, in the episode I'm currently listening to, episode 26, you mentioned natural selection in your revisited selection discussion about mods. So here's a set of rapid-fire questions in traditional reader mail form. Did you like the game enough that you're looking forward to natural selection 2? Related to that, what do you think of mod developers going on to make commercial games? Is it living the dream or selling out? Finally, what do you think about the balance of listening to fans and maintaining developer vision for a game, especially with respect to social media? Thanks for reading my email, etc. Okay.
I can answer the last question because it's easy.
Do it.
I think every developer listens to what their fans have to say, but I think people on the internet are very confused about how that feedback is taken.
Right.
It doesn't leap. Yeah. I think we've answered this question before, probably in around episode 27.
We must do this. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of thing never leaps out of a forum and into a design document or like into an internal wiki, but just sort of as a sounding board for where you're at and just sort of what do these people think that they want is always an interesting question to ask in terms of feedback because, well, seriously.
No, I know.
What people ask for on a web forum is not necessarily what they want to deliver in a game. It's their articulation of a need that they, you know, are expecting to be fulfilled, and you can answer that. You can answer that request in a different way, or you can sort of say, well, I think what these people are really going to like this thing that they're not expecting, but we'll deliver on that. I mean, I don't...
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference.
What I really want is 18 guns.
Right. Exactly. The difference between being able to use that feedback to identify the problem and having the problem given to you by that person. I mean, someone might suggest something that reveals something that needs to be addressed, but it does not necessarily need to be addressed using the exact design choice that person has prescribed.
I personally really like just sort of as someone who makes things creatively, when people present me with a problem to solve is a far more valuable sort of thing than someone providing you with a solution and asking you to build it. So if you treat the feedback that your community gives you as problems that they want you to solve with your product, then everyone goes home a lot happier than when people on a forum say, here's how I'm going to solve your game design. It's like, well, that's obviously I'm not going to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that you know, I mean, every developer, I don't know if every developer reads what's on a forum, but the ones that do, most of them probably are coming at it from that approach. If it's a developer who reads community stuff and also delivers products that people like, at least, I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm speaking for too many people. I'll back that up. No one reads anything.
It's going to differ between. Depending on what kind of games they're making.
Yeah, the way that conduit works, I'm sure it changes from place to place. But that's at least how I see that stuff. And I do, I end up reading probably too much stuff that people say about things online. But
that's one thing that's really cool though about these mid-sized developers like Runic. There was an example recently where somebody linked a forum thread. Some guy has, I guess, what, astigmatism for like camera shake. Like it. I don't know if it was a medical thing. I can't quite remember what his. But
oh yeah, right.
Yeah, and like two posts later, a developer's like, "Oh, I just added that option in the settings. Go ahead." I mean, that kind of stuff is really cool.
He added like the ability to go into the
game options, as opposed to
the UI itself. But right. it was 3 hours.
Yeah,
in 3 hours, a guy from Runic Games had gone.
Yeah,
that's modified Torchlight to support this guy's eye condition.
I'm admittedly speaking like partly because it's a thing that I like about my own employer, but it is cool at studios where it's like your employee count is a 2-digit number. People can go onto those boards and just pose a question or start a discussion thread, and the odds are extremely high that someone will be posting from the same machine that they are concurrently using to develop the game that they're talking to that community member about, and that sort of stuff is cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it's cool.
Games. What were the other questions that guy had?
I forgot that there were other questions, and then I exited out of that particular email, and now I'm trying to find it again.
Oh, geez.
Oh, the second one was...
I can't remember.
Nice. It was on the tip of my tongue.
What is game?
What is game?
No, when? Now I almost remembered it for a second after asking myself, what is game?
We're awesome.
Oh.
We're naturals at this whole podcast thing.
We got it down.
If we keep this up, it'll really take off.
This is like going to see the horror movie, being like, come on, just don't open the door.
He was obviously asking about this.
Right.
Everyone has remembered. Oh, this is retarded.
Yeah, I can't find it. Okay, well, I'm going to go on to another thing.
Maybe
you guys can address this question, and then
that guy's going to be so disappointed.
I'm going to try to find it as we read something else.
23 episodes from now.
Selection was the first part.
Natural Selection. Okay,
did you play Natural Selection, and are you excited for Natural Selection 2?
I played like five minutes of Natural Selection, and I'm going to keep looking. So I don't know.
I played 10 minutes. But I know people who are really into that game, like still are, and are incredibly excited for Natural Selection 2. It's something that I missed for the most part, and I'm looking forward to this sequel, so that I can jump on the bandwagon.
The fact that everyone has talked about Natural Selection for so long makes me really intrigued by the second game.
Yeah.
But I don't know enough about any of that stuff to say anything about it. So, what was his third question?
The third one was the community. It was the second one.
What was the first
trying
question?
To unlock.
Natural Selection.
Okay, what was the second question? Video games is two words.
This is funny here in the meantime.
The rest of this is now going to just be delayed.
I know. Colt Ezreal Halam writes, or something, "Hey dudes, I'm a huge fan of the podcast. As far as I'm concerned, you're the only podcast worth listening to. Anyway, I wanted to email Facepalm. I demoed the new 2-lane League of Legends map to Nick this past week, and it finally struck me that you do the Idle Thumbs podcast, Nick. Your name sounded familiar, but I never put two and two together.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for continued support of our game. It's awesome hearing it on the podcast every once in a while."
Oh, wait. That was from somebody on Riot? What? What's going on? Huh?
I guess.
Oh.
Someone who demoed the level to you.
Yeah. Oh, demoed. Oh, I thought he just played it.
See Halam at RiotGames.com.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
Yes.
Go figure. Small world.
Yeah. No, it's fun playing with those guys. I actually crushed GameSpy.
Yeah,
it was me and two Riot guys, and we demolished.
Are you
GameSpy.
And two Riot guys?
Yeah.
No, but you're good at this game. I know.
No, I was leading, man.
Nice.
What do you think of mod developers going on to make commercial games?
Yeah,
is it living the dream or selling out?
Oh yeah, that's an easy
there
one. It's living the dream.
It's definitely not selling out.
No, it's not.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's probably in pockets of the mod community and in like the sort of readership of a site like TIGSource or what there I'm sure are people for whom seeing their favorite like bedroom programmer go commercial is like that guy is selling out and leaving the community. But on the other hand, if you're someone who makes good games and then someone wants to give you money to make more good games. Sweet.
Yep.
Absolutely.
That's my
the people opinion. Who are listening to this podcast while we're trying to think of that question. Like they know what that question
I
is.
I know
and they're
exactly.
Like, no, don't bother. No, keep going.
Sorry.
So yeah, we've the worst of all worlds. Yeah. It took forever to get to it, and then it was kind of obvious.
The other two questions were good though.
No, they're good.
Thanks, guy. You'll hear this in a week or two.
Yeah, really.
You'll hear us making fun of you after spending a long time trying to find your question.
Yeah.
David S. Has a fairly long question. Basically, the gist of it is he beat Uncharted 2 recently, and he was really impressed by the game's... what?
Nothing. Keep going.
The game's voice acting and overall script. He says, it struck me as the closest I'd heard a game come to normal human speech. And he says that applied to both the cutscenes and the in-game narration and anything. And his question, I guess, is why do video game scripts and voice acting skew so far from reality most of the time? Why did it take until late 2009 for dialogue in a big commercial game to arrest me as accurate? Are there challenges inherent to the medium? Is it an issue of priority? Is it that dialogue is aimed at a lowest common denominator? What is he, you know?
Money.
I don't think it's money.
Money?
No?
I really don't think that it's money.
No?
I mean... I know that, like...
In some cases,
I know that, like, where...
Well, what are we talking? Are we talking about dialogue, or are we talking about
voice
capture?
Voice performance.
Voice performance specifically.
Voice performance in games. Like, I know...
Okay.
Like, the games that I work on at Telltale have been hit or miss in the voice performance, but I think that we consistently hit above average for video game acting performances, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. That's admittedly extraordinarily biased. But... I don't even know why I brought that up, because Uncharted 2 does an amazing job with their voice performance, and I think what it comes down to is caring about
direction,
casting, and caring about direction.
Yeah.
From what little experience I have working, like being in the studio when people are recording voice for a video game, from what I hear people in the studio talking about, I think the tendency in games is you bring the actor in, you put down the page of your script, you fly right the fuck down that page. If there's a one that you, if there's a take you don't like, you go back and fly down the entire page a second time.
Well, especially if that person
before you can put the brakes on, the guy is on the next page, just going for it. And
my guess is actually in that case, money would be a hindrance. Or when you get a big name actor and you have him for a day and you have to get through all of those lines, I would guess that's probably
that is probably part of it. But I also just I think that it. You have to be willing to take the time in the studio to get the takes. You have to have someone in the studio who is
it's using your time well. Also, it's actually communicating good direction. I mean, there was an interview with Ellen McClain, who was GLaDOS in Portal, and she's the announcer in Team Fortress 2, and she was the Overwatch in Half-Life 2, and she was saying that one of the things that she loves so much about working with Valve as opposed to working with other video game companies is that they actually direct her and they actually communicate
that's what I mean. You need
what needs to be said.
The guy in the booth, I think at a lot of game companies, you end up with just the audio producer maybe or something is there, or like the sort of studio voice producer or voice director, probably freakishly often without the writer or even, I don't know, maybe I'm just bullshitting all of that. I don't really know, but that's often the impression that I get, at least. But yeah, like you can tell with Valve's voice direction that they have people in the room with the actors who really care about context, who really care about the timing and the tone of the delivery. And I get the impression that where that actually does fall apart is actually
in the booth.
In the booth when the actor's there, which is the weirdest thing to me, because that is when you're spending the most money.
Mm.
That's when you think you should be having as many eyes as possible on that moment, where it's like you've got the studio time, you've got engineers in there, you probably have some of your dev team in there, you have an actor who you're paying a lot if it's a union gig and if it's a large role. And I think that people at that point, that's when it's like, it's just game audio. from a sort of scoping budget standpoint, and that seems to be where it crumbled. I mean, the script also has to be good.
Yeah, well, and on the topic of the script, like, there has to be enough in there that you can provide motivation,
right?
You can provide direction.
Right. That's
like,
the thing.
If it is just there bullshit, is
a, yeah,
yeah, yeah,
lock and roll, rock and roll.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that
there
is,
are a lot of quests like, and things in games that are just
Uncharted 2. Like, I think that's what we were talking about last week with Steve. Is that when, like, and it is in the first 2 seconds of the game, but when the guy says what could possibly go wrong, and then other people laugh it off. I know that was my example from last week, but it was like, hey. You know,
sounds like what it would sound like.
It was like sort of self-aware sarcasm, but wasn't what could possibly go wrong.
Dun, dun, dun.
But then, like, no, even that can be played off wrong. Where it's like someone says it that way, then someone's like, "Oh, you always say that."
Yeah,
and
right.
Oh, and then like the scene sort of awkwardly fades out as the characters go back into sort of mocap, like calisthenics for a second.
That is ultimate video game. That's actually it really is. Brutal Legend occasionally does stuff like that, which Brutal Legend, really unfortunate because the actual. Vocal performances in that game are excellent.
Yeah,
but occasionally the camera lets it down.
It does.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of little
pieces,
little points where you can drop the ball on that, if you don't keep them all going, your moment or something falls apart weirdly.
It's quite difficult to recreate the essence of a real human being when you're doing real time 3D graphics with a disembodied voice.
Yeah.
Also, I mean. Once you have voice actors in a booth reading a script, especially in the styles that we're talking about here, you're not only recreating a human, but you're recreating the sort of stylized, very visually and tonally directed nature of a film or an animated film, which is like the most precise.
Right.
Like a good version of that is there's a lot of rules for what people are expecting to come across. Like Uncharted 2 does not sound like actual people talking. Uncharted 2 sounds like... Well, that's what the person said in the email.
Well, it creates the essence of it.
But
like,
it creates
how your brain...
It matches up very closely with your expectations for how that sort of conversation goes after watching a good Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And they hit all the notes really well in that game.
Yep. Yeah. I agree completely.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't know if
blah,
I
mean, blah, 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 blah.
There was probably other email in here. It was...
Also, yeah, I will just say that I said a lot of stuff just now, and... A lot of it is inference from very little information that I've just sort of picked up from various things. So
no, that was good.
I'm sure someone's going to write in and be like, well, actually, in most game companies, the creative director is in the booth all the time, and the writer is in the booth all the time, and I wouldn't know because I work at a
that's kind
little
of
adventure game company.
It's not paying off as much.
Yeah, but
that,
yeah right.
Yeah, but it just, that's...
Probably
that is how
nobody's
it,
going
that
to know how it's done everywhere,
so you
probably won't get that email.
Yeah, I know, but that is always how it has felt to me, is that like the script in games... Not often that solid, but sometimes probably there's more to work with than what comes out of the actual voice performances.
It also depends on what kind of game we're talking about. Where if there are like,
we're done with this. Fuck you, Nick. No, what are you gonna say?
I was going to say if there are four or five strong characters to work with, and they have the time to develop that character in the booth, and you know.
Oh yeah,
developer rapport.
They don't usually do that. They don't usually record simultaneously.
Well, no. But just that one person,
even with the actor
having,
I don't know. I mean, at least the way we do it is we put out auditions, get one person back that you like, or you know, you end up with your top five or whatever. Say we're making the calls to this guy, bring him into the booth, and maybe you'll tweak their performance a little bit. Like you did this and we liked that, but we want you to take it a little bit in this direction. Go for it. And I don't think it's like a Pixar film very often where it's like, oh, we've got Tom Hanks in here and we're gonna workshop this character
bounce
for two or three days.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mean I just mean that at least that person is doing enough dialogue to where they're comfortable with the character.
And the game
treats that character differently because
it's
a central character.
Reloading.
What exactly. Well, or just, you know, a lot of like random people in the world that, you know, have speaking lines that are important. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that to me is, you know, is where game dialogue usually falls apart, is when there's just a huge amount
of sweet barks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And just incidental dialogue. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, totally
or just,
true.
You know, a random guy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like the quest, the guy who like you meet one time for
right,
that
yeah,
quest.
Yeah.
Or
what
like,
are you buying?
Fucking masterpiece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you selling? Very wild and listen.
Whoa!
Why didn't I do that on the one?
Also, why did you turn into Rip Torn?
All right, so I guess this is our last one. Cameron writes, "Dear Thumbs, I wrote you last week and you read my email, which is exciting." Some more of that. "I was at IKEA yesterday and saw this odd bench-type half-chair thing. It was confusing. The attached tag only served to add to my confusion. Perhaps you being professors... professionals in the gaming industry.
Oh, professionals. Professors.
No.
Well, yeah, I did too.
Perhaps you being professors in the gaming industry.
Being professional.
have insight into what this gaming position might be and how this strange furniture may serve to supplement it. Eagerly awaiting your wisdom, Cameron."
Eagerly.
So
eagerly.
He includes... he includes a photograph of an IKEA chair that has a tag to it that says, "Rest your arms here when in gaming position." There appear to be no arms on this chair.
Oh, it's
what this chair is for?
I don't.
It's for Twilight Princess only.
This is actually the
slouch your arms down over
right.
the sides.
Oh man, bringing it back to episode 3 or whatever episode, that was.
Yes. It's for Cheeto hands activation.
All right, so if I make a DLC post on the blog, I'll include this picture.
Yeah.
I think that's all we got. This is probably a super long episode. Sorry about that. I think we got to wrap it up though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Video game.
I think he shows up on the podcast just from "Thanks for sitting on the couch listening here." No problem.
Yeah.
Shit.
Oh, whatever. That makes that episode more hilarious too. It's just, oh, that other guy, this other industry luminary. Yeah, also, he's just checking his email over there. This is how we roll here at Idle Thumbs.
Jake Rudkin, developer at Telltale Games, and Steve Gaynor, designer on Bioshock 2, and Chris Ramo, editor-at-large of The Art and Business of Making Games, present, "We're Gonna Fuck Up Your Press Plans." That would be a weird... Why am I recording this? I'm never gonna get a live performance. Embargo busters.
Oh, it was because Jared misspoke in a hilarious way that spawned that voice. We were talking about Zelda 2, and that combined into Zeldu, which, of course, turned into Veldu, which is my favorite thing in the world. So that is Edwin's game, The Legend of Zeldu.
Nice.
Sorry.
Zeldu or Zeldon't?
Yeah. Oh, we'll just beep it all out. Did you listen to that last week?
Yeah.
You know, when we all...
I actually didn't. I did listen to it. In fact, I was surprised at how much was left in.
What? There's not
nothing
a
was left
in.
Borderlands.
That was the only thing.
I know. That's what I thought. I was surprised. No, it is.
Oh, I bet you'd have the Borderlands all over that one or whatever. What? Boop, 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 boop.
Yeah, that was funny.
Well, that cat was already out of the fucking bag. I mean, there was not, what?
Yeah, I know.
Boop, 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 boop,